ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, November 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio and wrap up this month on Bang the Book Radio, as when we chat again, it will be the month of December. I got two segments left for you here for this week on Bang the Book Radio. The first, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week 13. I'll give you my picks for the Bang the Book podcast entry off of a 4-1 week up to 26, 28, and 6 on the season here. A lot of sixes in there, but 16-8-1 over the last 5 weeks. So hopefully I can keep things rolling here on today's segment, and I'll get some help from Joe Everett of Draft Scouts and Insider Football to break down this week 13 card. Second half of today's show, Brent from DSI Sports joined me with this week's version of the odds report. Brent, of course, the head risk manager over at DSI, and we'll talk about week 14 of the college football season with the conference championship games, 10 of those, and then four makeup games that make up the college football card. Now we'll take a look at week 13 in the NFL as well, discussing sharp action, where lines may be moving, all that fun stuff here on what is one of our favorite segments of the week on Bang the Book Radio. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of tremendous content here heading into a busy weekend of the NFL. We've got NFL updated NFL power ratings from Danny Vorgs, as well as Alan Moody's updated set of NFL power ratings. My college football power ratings and week 14 lines are posted up at the website as well. We've got best bets articles, top trends. We'll have a daily fantasy article from myself. We'll give you all kinds of stuff for basketball, both NBA and college. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. You want to make sure that you're on top of everything over there at bangthebook.com, because a lot of good resources over there for you as you look to go out there and cash some tickets. Also, Saturday, the first day of December, which means that our monthly contests will reset over there at bangthebook.com. Get involved in those, win some cash prizes. Free to join, just sign up with your email address. You'll wind up getting our newsletter emailed to you, but you'll be able to have access to those free pick contests. Certainly something that you want to look to take advantage of over there. And then also, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up at DSI using that promo code BTB200, you will get a 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for the sportsbook, and the same thing for the live casino over there at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Two segments left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. The first, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week 13. Bang the Book podcast entry, 4-1 last week, 16-8-1 the last 5 weeks, 26-28-6 for the season here. So we'll see if I can keep that train rolling. Here is this week's version of the Westgate Super Contest selection segment with myself and Joe Everett. All right, I'm joined now by Joe Everett of Draft Scouts and Insider Football. We're going to chat here about week 13 of the Westgate Super Contest. Joe, how's it going today, man?
Oh, great Thursday. Ryan Gosling's about to go to USC. I mean, La La Land is official out there.
Yeah, right. And you and I were talking about that before the show. And, man, I think it's a great hire for USC. It's not really a great hire for Clay Helton, because – now he's very easy to fire, since it appears that there's a very highly paid assistant right there on his staff ready to take over.
Oh, yeah, that collar's got to be pretty tight on Clay, but I'm looking at it from JT Daniels' perspective. That kid, there's a whole mountain of potential. He's super young, and working with a guy like Kingsbury, I think that's what my initial thought is, just, wow, what a mentor. For a real hot prospect that I think one day we're talking about a first round, maybe top 10 pick there in JT Daniels.
Are you surprised that Kingsbury didn't go to the NFL? Like, with how creative NFL teams are getting now offensively, because, I mean, they basically have to translate the college game to the NFL, because as you and I've talked about before, the offensive line play in the NFL is just not particularly good. Are you surprised Kingsbury didn't? I mean, he supposedly had NFL offers. Are you surprised he didn't take one?
Well, especially after reading that tweet from Gil Brandt, I think he put it out there, if he didn't, my mistake, but he said that there were two firm offers from teams for Kingsbury services, and I've got to imagine one of them's got to be Green Bay in that mix. I mean, how tempting that would be. But, like, regardless of who it is, he must have really, you know, decided that's not the direction he wanted to go in. And he also, I think it is part of the enticement. Not only did they back up a truck to his house, I'm sure, but the prospects there, the talent he'll have, specifically Daniels, I think that is an enticement to work because, you know, you're going there, he's going to look really smart with that kid year one, and there's not going to be a lot of, well, they're not scoring points. They're going to score points with that chemistry and that makeup. So I think that's part of the hire that must have given them the incentive. But, yeah, it's still shocking because there's got to be that itch. I don't care who you are or what level you are. It's like, wait, you mean I could coach Aaron Rodgers? Oh, wait, you know, I could go to New York and coach the Giants, and Saquon Barkley would be my running back. I mean, I'm not saying those are the teams, but I would have to imagine we've got all this talent in New York. Who should we hire? That had to be a conversation in New York. But be that as it may, it's pretty hot hire there for the Trojans.
All right, well, let's chat some Week 13 Super Contest here. My Bang the Book podcast entry, 4-1 last week, 16-8-1 over the last 5 weeks, up to 26-28-6 on the season. So that big hole that I dug myself early on, kind of getting myself out of it a little bit, and hopefully over the remaining weeks here, the Super Contest, I can keep that trend going. Our Bang the Book entry went 4-1 as well, 33-24-3 on the year. Bang the Book Gold entry also 4-1. 31-26-3. So a very good week over at bangthebook.com in the Super Contest last week. The field only hit at 49.88%, 51.81% for the season. The gold, 52.38. No VIG in the Super Contest, so that's a pretty decent percentage there. Now 53.7% for the season. And Joe, I got to say, I'm pretty happy here because the bye weeks are over. We're back to having 5 of the 16 games to pick from. Really 5 of 15 if you don't take the Thursday night game. However, through 12 weeks here, the consensus, the more popular side in the Thursday games, 3-10-1 against the spread. So for anybody who listens to this segment and is in the Super Contest or maybe in a pool of your own, something like that, may have to take some chances with that Thursday night game because it really has not been a good side for the consensus so far. But Joe, this is it. It's the stretch run. No more bye weeks, no more excuses, nothing like that. We're just looking at teams trying to get into the playoffs, trying to improve their playoff standing, or trying to improve for 2019.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more avenues or alleys, what have you, to pick on teams that may well be in the tank, and also some of those teams that just have too many injuries to survive, and at this point they're running out second and third stringers. So in all that full slate of games now, I think all those variables are flying around. Just definitely, though, if anything, I'd I'm kind of down in the last few weeks, so not that I'd have any good advice, but a lot of injury information out there. That's definitely one thing to be on top of, specifically linemen. I think that Thursday game tonight, you know, like the Tyron Smith thing is huge. I listen to a lot of podcasts and coverage out there. I don't hear anybody talking about Tyron Smith. And that's like, well, I don't know. If you started a top 5 list of tackles in the NFL, if he's not in the top 5, you're doing it wrong. So I think that's just an example of like injuries that aren't talked up nearly enough. So that with all these games and all these variables out there, that's one thing to be on top of, dotting your I's and crossing your T's on that injury report.
No, I completely agree with you. And I think another corollary to the injury report here is that, you know, a lot of people are into their fantasy football playoffs now or will be over the next couple of weeks. So those skill position injuries are going to get talked about ad nauseum because there are so many people that play fantasy and, you know, use the mainstream media networks for their fantasy news or the Twitter feeds that are out there or whatever else. But when you get down to this time of the year with 5 weeks left of the NFL regular season, you know, you've got a lot of linemen that are dinged up. You've got a lot of teams that are worried about protecting the quarterback or rushing the passer. And especially, too, at this time of the year, when you start getting really bad weather, you know, you put yourself behind the chains in those third and long situations. You make it very hard on yourself. If you can't protect the quarterback, you know, maybe you need to run the football a little bit more. Well, if it's a windy, chilly day, the opposition's already flooding the box. So they've already got nine guys there ready to stop the run. The injuries in the trenches are magnified even more at this time of the year because, in theory, if you've got games between, you know, a couple of competitive teams, those are usually played a little bit tighter. Nobody wants to make mistakes. And also, with the weather factors and considerations that are in play, you know, teams may have to change their game plans a little bit or may be a little bit limited, you know, in terms of converting those longer third downs or something like that. So those injuries in the trenches, I think, especially just because, I mean, those big boys get hit every single play. You know, if you're Saquon Barkley or Melvin Gordon or whatever, you may get hit, you know, a couple of plays in every set of downs, something like that. You're a lineman, you're getting hit every single play. So at this time of the year, you know, attrition just kind of takes hold a little bit. And that is something that I noticed a lot here this week, is that there are a lot of injury reports that read like the white pages.
There's just too many names on it. And I think, maybe call me crazy, but the bad weather has a combo with that too. I think it contributes to a little more dehydrated. Definitely dead legs too at this point in the season. You're out there in bad footing. Injuries even more likely. You plan not to get hurt in some of the cases at these teams that are out of it. It's guys paying to the next game day check. And I don't blame them one bit. I want them to make it to that next check. But I think, yeah, the weather affects a lot of that. But like you said, too, the game plans and just how much they can get done. I do have to point out to the people that think Matt Patricia's crazy for practicing outdoors, even though they got an indoor game coming up. It's part of it. It saps your body a little bit more to be practicing outside. It's the reason why the Patriots have done it for years. So I think they're not only getting used to that conditioning for future weeks, but more specifically just getting themselves more fine-tuned for a full 60-minute game, because a lot of these teams, that's the real trick, is finding out which teams want to play the whole 60-minute contest, because there's a lot of teams out there like the Raiders that are about ready for 40 minutes, maybe three quarters, if that. And that's about all they've got in them. Not saying they don't have the heart. It's just how well they're being conditioned. I've got my doubts. And I think there's the difference in Cleveland right now. This team's starting to get ready for a whole full game, whereas in the past, I think that's where they've kind of not been able to finish. Well, they weren't ready for that full 60-minute contest. So this starting to see the difference, I think, in teams that are ready for an entire contest.
And I think something that's so difficult here at this time of the year, and it's why, you know, you and I were talking before we started recording here, I like a lot of games this week, and I don't love a single game this week. And I think as you look up and down the standings here, you know, you've got three teams in the NFC that are 8-3 or better, and then you've got five teams at 6-5, another team, the Eagles, at 5-6, who, you know, obviously don't want to read up on the embarrassment the rest of the way and all off season long about how they won the Super Bowl and then didn't even make the playoffs and join that list of teams that, you know, has that same distinction. Over in the AFC, you know, you got three teams with eight wins. You got Pittsburgh at 7-3-1, Kansas City at 9-2. You've got two teams at 6-5, four teams at 5-6. So there are a lot of teams with playoff considerations and implications over the next 2 or 3 weeks before, you know, we start to see some of these teams fall off a little bit, especially if they're in the same division and, you know, only one team can win that game. So there's that element to it too, where you'd like to think that just about all of the teams that are in the playoff hunt are sufficiently motivated. And I'm going to talk about a team here today where, you know, maybe this week is kind of their last stand in terms of their hopes for making the playoffs. But at the end of the day, it could be a guessing game with some of those teams. I mean, we know that, you know, Arizona's trying. They're just not very good. We think San Francisco's trying. They're just not very good. Oakland, they're probably not trying anymore. The Jets, doesn't seem like they're trying all that hard anymore either. But I think there are more teams where we don't know than where we do know. And that's a key part of the handicap here in the NFL, because all these guys are professionals. And sure, we've got some big power ratings gaps this year. I mean, New Orleans is probably close to a 3-touchdown favorite on a neutral against Oakland, if not higher, one of the highest that we've seen in the few years. But what the difference is, what makes up the difference at the margins here a lot of times is effort. And so at this time of the year, weeks 13, 14, 15, it is a little bit of a guessing game to try and figure out who's going to come out ready to play, who's going to play that full 60 minutes that you just alluded to, and who's going to kind of go through the motions a little bit, even if something's on the line.
I think that's what makes this week difficult is those teams. I've named for them right in the Jaguars. I'm not sure which Jaguars team shows out. I don't have a valid report on Jalen Ramsey's the situation with his injury. We know Fournette's suspended, but like the Titans. Which Titans team is going to show up? And I think a lot of it is these new coaches, like the Cardinals. I'm sure a lot of that roster may have, but Fitzgerald hasn't quit. I know Josh Rosen wants to put some good footage out there. There's some wide receivers that can run on that team, and then the Lions with that new coaching staff. I mean, I don't want to count them out. I don't think Patricia's a complete fraud here. I know he's a good coach. I know he's a good teacher. I've seen clinics with this guy just laying it out, how to get coverage in phase, out of phase. Like, he's just, it seems like in the classroom, on the chalkboard or the whiteboard, what have you, like, that's where his specialty really lies. And it's just, if he can get the rest of the package together, I think that's a coach you got to believe in. But where his team's at right now, I couldn't give you accurate. In that Titans team with Vrabel, sometimes they come out looking like something completely different with LaFleur and those packages they've run, but then the other weeks, they're flat. So, there's some still, I think, I don't want to fall back on the new coaches being the reason, but there's some teams it's just hard to get the accurate gauge on them at this point.
Yeah, and even when you look at it, too, I mean, look, the Saints are doing things that we haven't seen many NFL teams do in a while. And, in fact, I think they can be – the stats out there, I'm probably going to misquote it, but for the Saints to win 10 in a row and cover 10 in a row this week would be the first team in a very, very long time to do it, if not the first team ever. Rams, 10-1, we know they're very good. The Chiefs at 9-2, they're good, but we've got questions about that defense. The Patriots at 8-3 – should be really good, but also, I mean, Tom Brady is well on the wrong side of 40 now. As he gets into weeks 18, 19, and maybe even 20, you know, then what does he look like? We're not completely sure. Are the Texans for real, or are they just a benefactor of a pretty weak schedule here? The Steelers, week in and week out, we don't know what we're going to get from them. The Chargers, everybody expects the Chargers to kind of take a step back because history tells us that they're going to. When does that happen? Is it this week? I don't know. The Ravens, you know, is Lamar Jackson for real here? I mean, is he a guy that can lead this team to the playoffs? Are the Colts actually this good now? Then you go over to the NFC. You know, the Bears, 8-3, played a terrible schedule. They've played one of the weakest schedules in the NFL so far this year, but they've done a very good job. They answered the bell against the Vikings, answered the bell in the short week against the Lions without Trubisky. Maybe we need to give them a little bit more credit. What is Dallas? Every other week, Dallas does something different that makes no sense. What is Minnesota? We have a pretty good idea of who the Redskins are, and there's a lot of people looking to fade them. But that's the thing here is that, you know, maybe it's parity. I choose to call it inconsistency. That just on a week-to-week basis, I think there are so many Jekyll and Hyde teams in the NFL that, you know, I feel very fortunate over the last 5 weeks to be 16-8-1, and I never want to take anything for granted. And that's why, like I said, I like a lot of games this week. But in terms of, you know, a game I would really line up and put my full conviction behind, I don't think I see one.
Yeah, like we were talking before, I've crossed a lot of games off the old sheet here to where it's if I've got one confidence pick, I think that might be it on a whole full slate of games this week. It's just there's some different teams that could show up. I'd still look back to this Jaguars-Colts game. Are the Colts that good? You know, we're going to find out real soon, but that could just be a flat spot with all these changes. The new offensive coordinator, I mean, that hire, you still got me. Like, I call me crazy. I still think Hackett is a potential coach down the road. I wouldn't rule that out. I thought that towards the end of last season, the game plan they ran against the Patriots in the playoffs was a little bit of genius there. I don't understand, obviously he's got to make a move, scapegoat, what have you, but how that building reacts, do they, you know, respond because they love Hackett? I don't know. It's just that game, you know, I'm almost staying away if I can help it.
All right, well, let's take a look here at some of my thoughts for week 13. I've got four games that I would consider picks at this point. I've got three additional leans. So like I said, I like a lot of things, but I don't love anything. So these are kind of interchangeable for me. It's just sort of, you know, nitpicking on which ones I like the most. But we'll go in rotation order here, as I always do. Beginning with number 7 in the Super Contest rotation order, the Carolina Panthers. They're a 3.5-point road favorite here against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This number opened 3, went up to 3.5, which is where the Super Contest line came out. And, you know, Joe, you and I have talked about the Buccaneers here before. I mean, they're just kind of in shambles. They did get the win last week. I think it's more about the state of the 49ers right now, and in particular, the state of Nick Mullins and the offense for the 49ers, not being able to move the football on this Tampa Bay defense. But, you know, we know that Jameis Winston's not the future anymore. And, you know, I can't imagine that the new regime with the new head coach, new coordinators, maybe a new GM if they finally decide to go that route, I can't imagine that they'll be all that tied to Winston either. They didn't draft him. They haven't invested in him. I don't think they're going to worry about him that much. So with him as the quarterback here, I still have serious concerns about Tampa Bay's offense. A myriad of defensive injuries, as we know. Quan Alexander, Levante David, Justin Evans, you know, so forth. They've got a bunch of guys banged up on that side of the ball, which is really not great when you're trying to chase around Christian McCaffrey, Cam Newton, Curtis Samuel, if he can go, and then DJ Moore as well. Allowing 6.4 yards per play is this Tampa Bay defense. Only 8 takeaways. Yeah, Carolina's pass defense isn't great, but Ron Rivera's had Tampa Bay's number 5-2 against the spread since Winston was drafted. Carolina's dropped 3 straight. This has to be a circle the wagons game for the Panthers. They absolutely need this game, I think, if they want to hold on here in this wild card chase. And I think Tampa Bay is just the kind of team to give it to them.
Now, I wouldn't complain about it. The big worry is that, once again, on that injury front of corner, that's Dante Jackson, who the Panthers are really missing. I think that's been the biggest difference in that last game that they lost. He was just getting abused. It was Dave Moore, that new, was it Northeast Central, Northwest Central, Oklahoma. What a sleeper the Seahawks got in that kid. Now, he looks real good, but I want to remind people that was against Corn Elder. That was against Captain Munnerlin, you know, Dante Jackson is a much better corner, so that'd be the player I'd really like to see if he could return to lineup. I'm not certain that he is back in, so they can be had and against this wide receiver core. I know DeSean Jackson might be a little dinged up, but that still, they've got, I think, a guy that should be in the conversation for one of the best receivers in the game, Mike Evans, and then that Godwin and little Chris Humphreys in the slot is doing really good things for him. So I think that's where the Buccaneers do take advantage, just because I love the Panthers' defense, love the scheme. I love Keekly calling it out there. It's just that's where they're always prone. They can be had if they don't have great corner play, and I think that's why they spent the pick on Jackson. So I think that's the one little weakness there. But outside, I do like where the Panthers are at. I think they respond, backs up against the wall. This is that type of team that they have to be in the postseason. They're going to get it solved. And I also like where their offense is at. It's not just Greg Olsen and some McCaffrey and running and Cam. I think not only McCaffrey's taking his game up, but that DJ Moore kid is just, he is just a spark, insane results, what he did at the combine, and now it's really starting to come to fruition on the field. I don't know that he did a ton at Maryland as far as, you know, the numbers that people just, you know, sometimes stat scout, but you could see it in the plays, and now it's so translated. I think that's kind of that new dimension on offense for them. It's really going to be tough for, I think, both teams. I lean to an over, but as far as a side, I think the Panthers have got to be it. I just don't trust Tampa enough, and I think the biggest stat you named off there was that record Rivera's got against Jameis. That's tough to go against.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is that, you know, you have to sort of, at this time of the year, prioritize how much these injury situations mean to you, because every team does have them. And I certainly agree with you. Carolina has some significance with Jackson being out. You know, they've been without Matt Khalil most of the year. They've been without Darrell Williams for a good chunk of the year as well. So they do have some problems on the offensive line. The thing is, I just think this Tampa Bay defense is so bad. And they looked fine last week against the 49ers, but a lot of teams are going to look okay against the 49ers with their situation. So again, like I said, I mean, I would classify these as picks, but, you know, these seven games are largely interchangeable for me. Right now, I like the Panthers a little bit more than some of the others. But again, as we get a clearer picture of those injury situations, we'll see if Dante Jackson can go. We'll see if Eric Reed can go. See if Kawan Short can go. You know, maybe that will kind of be what puts me over the top a little bit with this Carolina side. Next up on the card here, number 9, the Atlanta Falcons. They're a 1-point favorite against the Baltimore Ravens. And I think the Ravens are going to be a pretty popular pick this week, so I don't mind going against the consensus here some. It's been pretty good for me over the last few weeks here. But to me, this feels like the last stand game for the Falcons. If you lose this game, 8-8 is the best that you can do. That's not going to get you in the playoffs. If you win this game, get to 5-7. You do have a manageable schedule the rest of the way if you're Atlanta. Now, you do play at Green Bay next week, which is not the easiest place to play, but Green Bay has, you know, their own problems as well. You host Arizona, then you're at Carolina, at Tampa Bay. At least you give yourself a chance to show up there at the table for the NFC playoffs. But if you lose this game, you don't have that chance. So in looking at the Falcons here, I know their run defense is abhorrent. I know that they have some injury problems of their own as well. But you've got 2 weeks worth of film on Lamar Jackson now. And what Lamar Jackson did has been very impressive. What Gus Edwards has done has been very impressive. They've also done it against the Bengals, who are an awful defense as well, and the Raiders, who just don't care right now. I think Atlanta, you have to get an effort out of them this week. I think it's really a do-or-die type of situation for them. So I think this is a step up in class for Baltimore, a step up in class for this Ravens defense that did give up 395 yards to Pittsburgh and 386 yards to Carolina in the two games prior to playing the Bengals and the Raiders. Falcons are back in the dome, extra rest to prep for Lamar Jackson. They've outgained the opposition in 4 of their 7 losses. I want to trust the Falcons here at home this week with a short price. Matt Ryan's much better in the dome, as we know. And I think I want to play off of the Baltimore perception a little bit, where everyone's really high on this team. I mean, there are reasons to be high on this team with a good defense and what Lamar Jackson is doing. But, you know, the Falcons are a savvy veteran group. They know what's on the line here this week. They have to have a last stand at some point. And if I decide to go with the Falcons this week, I really hope that they come through with that concept.
Oh, yeah, I think the Falcons is the right side. They've been in every game they've played in at home. And more so than that, I look at Matt Ryan as being a completely different animal in that Georgia Dome than he is anywhere else. And I should say at home, they're that new stadium. But point being, inside, indoors, with no elements, I think Matt Ryan's a different quarterback. And he's shown that this season he's on a tear. I was kind of shocked when I looked at the actual passing yardage. And it's not Pat Mahomes. It's Matt Ryan way up there. He's just been slinging it all year. And I think that addition of Ridley really opened up the offense. And I just see them scoring. Baltimore's got a good defense. That's all well and nice, but still how they match up on the perimeter with this team is I don't see them stopping Julio. Hell, they can't stop AJ Green. Better quarterback in this situation. And also I think the footage is finally going to catch up here. There's plenty of film on what they're doing. Lamar Jackson, I agree with you. There's a savvy veteran group here. Dan Quinn, Marquand Manuel, they've seen plenty of college offenses before too. So I think they bow up. And then the other X factor is Deion Jones, their middle linebacker. He was activated from the short-term IR and he's practicing. I don't think it's a lock that he plays Sunday, but if he's out there, I think he's going to play, because if I remember reading right, he's calling defense out on practice. They're probably not wasting time with that unless he's suiting up. So I think Deion Jones plays. They're at home, a different team. And, yeah, Atlanta shocks the public pick, because you're right. There's going to be plenty of Ravens backers after these two hot weeks, people all up on the bus. But it was Jerome Bettis is the real bus, and I think Falcons are going to remind him of that.
And, of course, there are some concerns here in the secondary for Baltimore. Jimmy Smith was sick this week, missed some practice. He was back at practice here on Thursday, so he should be good to go. But, you know, he wasn't the only guy on this team this week, so maybe something kind of going around the locker room a little bit. It is kind of that time of the year. And, you know, just as a side note for people, in the NHL, that can be a very big deal. So keep an eye out for that bit of news when it comes to pucks, because you might be able to find a couple of angles situationally with some teams maybe dealing with some sicknesses. But you've got some factors I mentioned. You've got Tony Jefferson. He missed practice today. So he may not be in this game. You've got a couple other corners that are banged up a little bit. And, you know, obviously we know that Matt Ryan is a guy that can exploit those types of things. Has been completing a lot of passes, taking care of the ball. The defense has just let him down. And I think with the Saints, where, you know, they were on a short week, they're going out on the road, they had that fourth turnover game, is something that they, you know, typically don't do, including losing three fumbles. I think this is a good old regression to the mean bounce back type of spot for the Falcons. That being said, if the Falcons lose this game, which is certainly a possibility, I would be worried about them going forward as maybe a team that does kind of be one of those that throws in the towel. So hopefully the Falcons rally this week, but I think that you know, in future weeks, if they don't win this one, things could be a little bit tough for them. Moving on here to number 12 in the Super Contest rotation order, that is the Cleveland Browns. They're +5.5 down in Houston against the Houston Texans. Baker Mayfield goes back to the Lone Star State here. He's only been sacked twice over the last three games. No sacks in the last two games. The Browns are stretching the field a lot more the last 2 weeks. Balls out in space to Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson. They're getting David Njoku involved more in the offense. The Texans are a big overachiever here as well. They're 27th in both offensive and defensive red zone efficiency from a touchdown standpoint. Texans have the Colts on deck. Cleveland is playing with a lot of confidence right now, and this is Baker Mayfield's team. This is the leadership that they've been lacking. Hugh Jackson may have been a good talker, may have been a guy that emotionally cared about the players, but his results kind of spoke for themselves in terms of the leader he could be out there on Sundays. Baker's that guy. Maybe they're playing for Greg Williams a little bit. Maybe Freddie Kitchens is just an offensive savant. But I think the Browns are in a really good spot here this week. Conditions won't be a problem there down at Reliant Stadium or NRG Stadium, whatever the hell it's called now. I think the Browns are the right side here this week.
Yeah, I'm not stepping in front of that mojo they've got going right now. That quarterback rating stat I read with Baker Mayfield, since Huey headlines left, it's like there's only one quarterback that's better, and that's Drew Brees, as far as in that time span. That's just like plain Jane, the difference. And Freddie Kitchens deserves a lot of that credit, but I think it's a feeling in the whole building. You know, obviously, Baker's playing well. The offense is humming. The defense has been playing well. Even the players are saying, we so needed this discipline right now. So I think that's just it's a group. I don't want to just say, oh, I'm backing them every week because I love what's happening here, but I'm close. So I'm definitely, as good as the Texans are playing, I can't jump on a six with them. I'd say the side you want to be on is probably the Browns, but in this game, I don't know if I'm getting involved. I kind of like that total. I think with both these offenses going right now, that's I don't see the Texans get slowed down. Browns, they're clicking, and that Houston secondary can still be had. I don't like their linebackers and coverage. If Njoku plays especially, I think we see a high-scoring game here. But that's another injury just to be monitored. I think Njoku really opened some things up for Cleveland. Not that he's the best tight end in the world, but he's just so athletic, and that speed he has up the seam, that gets safeties real worried and opens up the running game. I think when you got guys like Callaway and Njoku with that – those young legs, man, it makes a big difference to where I think, sure, Chubb's talented, but he's having this success, I think, because a lot of the people around him, too.
Well, and of course, with that Texans pass rush, Baker Mayfield's a little bit elusive. So, you know, they've done a much better job of protecting him. And Freddie Kitchens said that from the start. He said, we got to keep Baker Mayfield protected. I mean, this kid is the franchise's future. We weren't protecting him. We're going to do that now. And they have done it. You got to give them credit for that. Maybe some of it has to do with Desmond Harrison being out of the lineup. I think that does help them a little bit because he's kind of a turnstile there at left tackle. But you know, they've done a better job of protecting Baker. He can move around a little bit. Should keep those Texans pass rushers at bay. So I think the Browns do have some success there in Houston on Sunday. Another one that I like here, this is one I would classify as a pick. Number 14, the Buffalo Bills. Looking to go back on the Bills here once again after taking them last week to a winner. And, you know, I watched, like I said, I was in Vegas, but I was at the craps table watching a good amount of that Dolphins-Colts game. And the Dolphins are just so vanilla. Even Ryan Tannehill, Brock Osweiler, doesn't matter who's back there. They are so vanilla. And if you're not going to be creative, a defense like the Buffalo Bills is going to stop you. And the Bills defense has played very, very well here this season. Miami's afraid to stretch the field, afraid to take some shots. That's going to allow Buffalo to keep this game very, very close. Josh Allen, second week back, he should be a little bit better. Dolphins have some injuries on the offensive line as well. Some skill guys are dinged up. They're living off of turnovers. I think they have 22 takeaways on the year, but they're minus 0.8 yards per play this season. Yeah, they've had some injuries, but this is a Dolphins team that overachieved early in the year. I don't think they've regressed back to their mean as of yet. I'm going to take the Bills down in South Florida here, and as Brian Blessing mentioned on Tuesday's show, the Bills should be very well represented down there in the Sunshine State with people, whether they're flocking to get away from the Buffalo weather or just, you know, transplants that are down there. I like the Bills in this spot here this weekend.
Oh, yeah, the Western New York Snowbirds down there, that's something to think about. But I kind of like where this Bills team is in general. I think they're starting to find themselves. And look out, Robert Foster, searching for Bobby Fischer. Robert Foster got to Alabama as like a five-star and just never played. It was injuries, crowded Alabama roster and everything, and undrafted. And you wanted, boy, it just never happened because, you know, a lot can happen in years of college. And you waited for this kid because the elements were there to his game. He's real long. He gets a nice release. He's smooth, really great feet. And it's starting to happen for him in Buffalo. So I think they find a weapon there. They still like Zay. You've got McCoy. There's some good stuff happening, I think, in Buffalo right now. And the bottom line is that kid leading is a pretty rare athlete. He's wet behind the ears, super green. I don't know what you want to call him, but there's not a lot of quarterbacks that's that athletic. It's like a young Roethlisberger, but faster and with a more lively arm. And that's not exaggerating. Like, that's what they have leading them out onto the field. So I think that's the team I'd rather have than as opposed to a Ryan Tannehill. I'm still hearing he's throwing in pain. So you're certainly not getting behind the Dolphins, and I don't really want to have too much to do with Miami, especially with the Packers and the Colts, with the points they could muster against those defenses. I'll take my odds and chances with Leslie Frazier's defense and the Bills.
So the four games I would classify as picks as of now: Panthers minus 3.5, Falcons minus 1, Browns plus 5.5, Bills plus 4.5. Three leans here to wrap up the Super Contest segment. Beginning with number 6 in the Super Contest rotation order, that's the Los Angeles Chargers here. They're plus 3.5. I wish Melvin Gordon was playing, as does everybody who's interested in the Chargers. But I do really like Austin Eckler. I think he's a very talented player. You can get him out in space. He's a little more explosive, more yards per touch. I think that also helps neutralize the Pittsburgh pass rush a little bit, that they have to be worried about him as a receiver. You probably have to have one less rusher when you're worried about a scat back type guy like that in Eckler. So that may neutralize the best part of the Pittsburgh defense. The Chargers are doing a very good job of defending the red zone. The late start with this game being flexed to 8:00 now plays more like a regular game for the Chargers. The weather obviously could be a factor, but you'll have to stay up to date on the latest forecasts for that. But the Chargers protect Phillip Rivers well. He gets the ball out quick, gets it to Eckler. Maybe, you know, Justin Jackson out of Northwestern will be a pretty decent asset for them. He was a very good running back in college. I think he had 4 1,000-yard seasons, if I remember correctly. So the Chargers, yeah, missing Gordon is a problem, but I think they have a lot of positives here. I think they can get to Ben Roethlisberger, and, you know, the Steelers have their usual drama going on. I kind of like the Chargers here. The only thing that concerns me is I think they're a pretty popular dog, and those trendy dogs don't tend to do very well in the NFL.
Yeah, that Jackson kid, I'm pretty sure he's career record holder in touches and like totes in the NCAA as far as receptions and carries and all that. So he answers the bell every time. He's a real solid player, great receiver. And Eckler's a good kid, great lateral movement, so explosive. But can either of them pass block? That's my biggest question. That's where we'd be in trouble against that Steelers odd front. And then on the other side, like, that's where I worry. I was, kind of tasting it over at first glance of that game. But you look at the pass rush for both these teams, it's going to be tough. What, with Bosa back, and then Gilbert hadn't played five games, that right tackle for Pittsburgh. And I think that's been a little bit of a downgrade for them. Sure, they're still winning games, scoring points. I think that all those skill position players the Pitts got, been a blessing for him, but still it's got to be slowed down. And then what is Vance McDonald going to play? I think that takes a little bit of a degree off their offense too. So I don't know if I'm jumping on the Steelers, but this game, it's tough to call either way. But I would tell anybody that's ready to say, oh, two offenses like this, lock up the over. I'm not so fast with Lee Corso and the number two pencil, but I wouldn't blame you for going Chargers, because I think they've got just as good a shot as anything. But this could be one of those last team scores games. I think that's kind of what they're thinking. They're telling you with that line, was it still -3 or 3.5? Man, tough game there.
Yeah, there is a little bit of variance attached to that game, certainly, to say the least. We'll go to rotation number 18 here, the Cincinnati Bengals, +4.5. I'm looking to go against the grain a little bit here, because the Broncos have been a wrong side winner each of the last 2 weeks. They've been badly outgained by the Chargers and the Steelers, but they are forcing takeaways, so I guess you have to give them credit for that. But with Andy Dalton out, I think that this really simplifies the offensive game plan for the Bengals, where Jeff Driscoll may run around a little bit. They're going to use Joe Mixon. They're going to use Gio Bernard. They're going to try to do some things to get the ball quick to A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd out in space. Those are two tall targets that are tough guys to bring down. There are some defensive injuries for Cincinnati here. Those do kind of concern me a little bit here, but I think you can run on the Denver defense. Of course, Denver's probably going to run on the Cincinnati defense too. But if this is a game about running the football, I think Cincinnati can have a little bit of success there. I think this clock keeps moving, and getting the 4.5 points against a Broncos team that really shouldn't have won the last 2 weeks, I do kind of like that side some.
I wouldn't blame it. Just a simple fact to me, maybe I'm crazy, but watching that Bengals game, Driscoll gets in there, they had life. I thought the sort of complexion changed for Cincy. And also, if A.J. Green's going to come on back, then come on back home. That certainly wouldn't hurt my fantasy teams. Be that as it may, I think Driscoll might be a bit of a spark to where they know exactly what they're getting with Andy Dalton. That's the reason why they still have Andy Dalton in the building. They want to pay him a certain amount and get on to the next season. But that's not how players live. They really want to see if they could make a difference, see if there could be a spark. So I think they're invested in just change, period. But they may also see something in Driscoll. So I wouldn't blame you on the pick. But then again, I'm also a Broncos fan that just never can seem to back my team any week. I always see there's a flaw here that we're not going to be able to cover. There's too much speed with John Ross and, whatever. I'll look for an excuse for the Broncos to take an L. So, I wouldn't blame you for the Bengals. Just in the simple fact, I think a lot of people might be underestimating that Driscoll element.
One more game on my leans list here. That's the Seattle Seahawks. They're a 9.5-point favorite against San Francisco. This number's 10 in the market, so I'm happy to see the 9.5. Maybe winds up being one that I play, but obviously releasing Reuben Foster doesn't help this 49ers defense at all. Nick Mullins, bad back-to-back starts. Seahawks had 8 straight games with 150 or more rushing yards prior to last week, so if they get ahead in this game, they certainly have the rushing attack to salt this one away. So the Seahawks with the big number would be the last of my leans here for today's segment. Joe Everett, who's working, you can find over at Draft Scouts and Insider Football at Joe W. Everett on Twitter. Thank you so much for your time, man. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again here on Monday.
All right. Sound like a plan.
All right, there you go. There is the Week 13 Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. Joe Everett helping me out there with that. Again, Bang the Book podcast entry 4-1 last week, 26-28-6 on the season. Looking at Panthers, Falcons, Browns, Bills, and on my leans list there, Chargers, Bengals, and Seahawks. We got one more segment left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. 10 conference championship games in college football, 4 makeup games, and then a full slate of NFL games. We're going to tell you where the sharp action is in those. So here is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent, the head risk manager at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Everything going wonderfully well. I mean, we're getting set, I guess, for a green, sunny Christmas, which always happens down here. It's difficult when you come from a colder climate like yourself, perhaps, and like myself, where you're used to snowy winters and Christmas and stuff like that. It kind of gives that feel. So you get down here and it's like sunny and 30 degrees Celsius for Christmas. It's like, it just doesn't feel the same, but I'm not going to complain.
I do want to ask you something here, Brent, at the top of the show before we get into the games that have some sharp action. We find out about the bowl matchups on Sunday. We're going to find out who's in the college football playoff, and we're going to find out who's going where from a bowl standpoint. So in terms of setting the numbers for those games, and what we typically see is we'll see a wide range of early line movement with people hitting openers. Then we'll see some people come back and circle back to these games the week of the game, and then obviously day of the game. We see some pretty big moves as well. In terms of setting these numbers, is it just straight looking at it from a power rating standpoint and then putting up a number? Or do you try to play a little bit of a handicapper side of it and look at, location, which teams may be motivated, things of that sort?
Yeah, I mean, you do have to look at all that stuff. And like when you talk about motivation, you could be saying like, how can a team not be motivated to play in a bowl game and stuff like that? But you always take into account what kind of the expectations were at the start of the season versus where they are now. Certain teams you kind of didn't expect to be there and they are there and they're just going to keep on playing great. Whereas you take teams that you thought they had, top 10 ranking, possibilities or being in a big bowl game and they get this, one of the minor bowls, you're really not as motivated perhaps to play that game. And you also like coaching factors as well, whereas one guy's got, might have one foot out the door and stuff like that. So there's a lot more to it. And, the thing too that I think kind of gets lost on people often is that there's different ways of handicapping a game. And when we talk about sometimes you've got sharps going one way and then later on the line moves to a certain number and sharps will bet the other way. And you're like, well, how are sharps going against each other? Well, obviously there's the value in certain numbers and we do have to move the numbers to try and get action on both sides. But there's also different handicapping philosophies. I mean, if you sit down, 5 different sharp guys who might be guys who are on my list, and they probably have 5 different ways of looking at the same game and coming up with their numbers. You've got, your analytics guys and your stats and, your situational guys, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's where, you can't really think about, okay, which way the sharps are going to go. You're just trying to look at a number that is going to reflect what's going to be kind of like the mindset of people in terms of guys who are going to bet this game. I mean, how motivated our team's going to be, like I said, coaches and all that kind of stuff. And also you look at your power rating numbers and just matchups as well, like how well are these two teams match up. You look at strength of conferences and strength of schedules and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's not an easy task at all, especially with the number of games that are out there.
Well, and it's also really unique too, in the sense that it's almost kind of like going back to week 1, where these numbers are up for a good little while before the games are actually played. I mean, you talk about the national championship, or not the national championship, but the semifinal games, which are a little bit earlier this year. They're up for about 3 or 4 weeks, about 3.5, 4 weeks before the game's actually played. The New Year's Day bowl games, there's going to be a lineup for these things. I'm probably, some books will post Sunday night, some will post Monday night, but New Year's Day, or I think there's bowl games on, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of January. These things are up for about a month. That's unique to the bowl season and also week 1. So that's important to keep in mind here too, is that, this is structured to where limits are low once these numbers are posted. Then as we get closer to the game, they go up a little bit. That's where you may see some pretty significant moves from sharp guys tipping their hands. And then obviously day of and, day before, stuff like that, you'll see a lot of action on those. So there's also that too, in that you have to manage your risk for, in some cases up to 4 weeks.
Yeah. And like you figure as we get going on in the season, your number should get better and better. But with these matchups, I mean, they're just not your typical matchups and stuff like that. So they are a little more difficult to price. And you do, even like late in the season, you still see a lot of volatility in terms of how some of these numbers move. I mean, you just never get it right all the time. And again, the function of our number, the way we're starting, is trying to balance act, and that's what where we're starting, because we just don't know who's going to win the game, and we don't know who the sharps are going to bet, and they're the ones who generally dictate the market.
Now, there is one other thing I want to ask you about here, and we're not going to talk about game 307, 308 between UAB and Middle Tennessee, but I had a listener of the show and somebody I talked to mentioned that maybe that line opened a little bit higher to protect against UAB conference champion futures. So I want to touch on that real quickly here, too, in the sense that, look, when you look at the Final Four, you're going to have Alabama, who a lot of people bet to win the national championship every single year because they should win it every single year. Clemson, I'm sure, is a side that you were exposed on a little bit as well. Notre Dame, who gets in the playoff this year, very public team. So maybe there were some people that kind of threw out a line on them. And then it looks like the final spot between Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Georgia, all teams that would be popular from a futures standpoint. So in terms of setting semifinal lines, do you look to protect a little bit if you are exposed on a future?
No, you really try to avoid that. You look at one game at a time and try and, you know, just put the futures and stuff like that aside. Now, if you happen to have like just a monster decision on, you know, on your futures and stuff like that, that may give you an indication where people are going to go in the game as well. If someone loved the team that much, but you know, the flip side of that, what if someone's going to hedge by betting the other side, someone who has a big position? So you don't know which way people are going to go. So you can't kind of, you know, anticipate where the bets are going to come in. I mean, yeah, this UAB game, this line has moved from 3 down to, well, we're 1 right here. And it's kind of interesting to me that you mentioned this game, just because I've got a wager count almost 5-1 favoring Middle Tennessee State, yet you've seen the line drop from like 3.5 dog 15 or 2.5 down to 1 where it is right now. I'll say right now, I don't have sharp money on this game either way, so I don't know what drove the number down, but I know that from what I've seen in terms of the public bets, they're all over the other side of Middle Tennessee State, just as a side note to that.
Well, and certainly we'll be able to talk some more about the bowl picture here next week, because the only college football game in town will be Army versus Navy, which I'm still glad that iconic game has a standalone week to itself. But we will have maybe some early bowl action to kind of take a look at on next week's version of the Odds Report to go along with week 14 of the NFL. But as far as week 14 of the college football season goes, we've got 3 games to touch on here with some sharp action. Then we'll also take a look at Georgia and Alabama at the end, which does not have any noticeable sharp action at DSI. Maybe somewhere out there in the marketplace there could be some. And, of course, there could still be some by the time we get to kickoff. But we'll start with game 309-310 here, Memphis and Central Florida. You and I were talking a little bit before we started recording here that this was a very tricky line to set, not just from a side standpoint, but from a total standpoint with the injury to Mackenzie Milton.
Yeah, and again, you talk about Milton, and yeah, you kind of – you know, he established himself in terms of what his, you know, perceived value was to the number. But when he's out of the game, it's all, you're kind of like, what's his replacement value? What's that guy worth? And you kind of, it's tough because, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, at this point in the season, you should be getting, you know, really good at your numbers. Especially, I mean, these two teams have played each other, you know, already and stuff like that. So, but then you're talking about, okay, how much is the other guy worth and how much of a step down, assuming it's a step down. I mean, maybe the guy's, you know, been waiting in the wings, just dying for his chance. So it is tough to price these things sometimes. And you have seen that this Central Florida game did open -4.5 on the side. We're down to 3 -115. I know there's some 3 flats out there. There's also some 3.5 dog 15. So there's, you know, almost like a half point around the 3 discrepancy out in the market with this one. But it has dropped from 4.5 down to 3 -115 where I am. Just, you know, worth noting, my wager count's almost dead even on this game as well. So it's not a bad spot for me. The total has gone as well. I didn't open as high as others in the market. We opened at 68.5 and got bet under right away. We're down to 64.5. And you see some places out there also open like 17.5. So this number has dropped quite a bit. Like almost, if you look at the highest opening number, it's dropped about 6 points. And that's a big, you know, a big, big move. Now, you know, the game itself, obviously Memphis got a little bit of revenge on their mind, I guess. They had that really close game earlier on this season. So, you know, that might be a factor where some of the, you know, the money that has come in on Memphis is not as much, just the quarterback situation.
Now, it seems like the Central Florida adjustment for Mackenzie Milton is somewhere around a touchdown, anywhere from 7 to 8 points, I think, is a fair move this down. And when you look at the game played between Memphis and UCF earlier on in the season, that was at Memphis, and UCF was a 4.5-point favorite. So, if in theory you flip home field and, you know, you're sort of looking at about a six and a half point adjustment there, which would have put this line around 11. You factor in the Milton thing, probably looking at a 6.5, 7 point adjustment. So it probably is accurate in terms of what he's worth to the line. How do you try to figure out what he's worth to the total?
Again, it's difficult. It's not so easy. And again, you've kind of got this, you know, this high scoring team that that Central Florida has been for, you know, for years now. Honestly, like, I mean, the last couple of weeks they haven't put up as monster numbers, but they've put up, you know, they're a team who generally puts up, you know, close to 40 points and can go over that. So, you know, how much of a factor is he in terms of bringing this number back down, and also the, you know, the opponent? I mean, how good is Memphis going to be in terms of them putting up numbers and defensively as well? So it's really not easy at all. And again, you're kind of got the psyche of people, you're used to people betting Memphis games over, and also the same holds true for Central Florida. I mean, Memphis has put up a whole lot of points as well. They've, whether they've won or lost, they've had games where they're putting up 50 points, and they've had games where they've given up, you know, 50 and 60 points as well. So it's really, you know, you've got really volatile teams, and then you look at the fact that these two played each other already and they put up a 61. So it's tough, I just tell you. And then obviously now we're down to 64.5, so obviously we did come up high, but the general feeling that you would get is that you're going to get a lot, you know, public money on the over when these two teams are involved. Now, I haven't seen, you know, a whole lot of public money involved in the total so far. I do have a count, you know, about 2-1 favoring the over, even though the number has dropped.
Excuse me. All right, let's go to the Big 12 championship game here. Game 311-312, Texas and Oklahoma. The sharp action on this game may surprise some people, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like this game, you know, just in terms of having a conversation about it, simply because, you know, it shows that, especially in these games, these championship games, where you're not talking about a typical college football Saturday where you've got 60 or 70 games on the board. You might have, you know, like 15 or whatever it is. You've got the write-in games and such like that. So, I mean, these are big games that are going to get a whole lot of concentrated action. It's almost like, you know, taking a Sunday NFL board versus the Sunday night game. I mean, you just get so much more action. So we're going to have a ton of action on this game. So, you know, more than usual, you kind of do factor in the way the public is going. The way I say this one's kind of interesting is that this number did open at 7.5. I did get bet by sharp money on Oklahoma -7.5, and I'm only sitting at 8. And you kind of like wonder why are you only at 8? Well, I mean, you do have to have the kind of tick up in terms of respect the sharp money, obviously, at 7.5. Now, moving 7.5 to 8 to 8.5, I mean, is there much difference between 8 and 8.5? Not a whole lot. And kind of like the deciding factor of why I'm still sitting at 7.5 is, you know, I've got a wager count of 3-1, even slightly more than 3-1 favoring Texas. So I've got a whole lot of public money going the other way on Texas. So this is one of those sharp and public splits that we like to talk about in terms of kind of a good spot for myself. So what I'm looking for is to have that public money drown out the sharp money and even have more money the other way on Texas, so I can actually be rooting for the, you know, sharps and be on the same side as the sharps come game day. This total kind of, you know, it fits the same way in that we opened this one at 78. It's down to 77 as well. And I got sharp money under the 78. But, you know, I don't even have to tell you, Adam, that, you know, my wager count is way over, and it's about 3-1 favoring the over. And why? Well, Oklahoma's involved, and people are going to bet the heck out of Oklahoma games over. They've done well to it, you know, most of the season. It's a high-scoring team who is involved in high-scoring games. So you look at these two teams, and they already played each other, and they put up, I think, you know, it was over 90 points. So 78 is where we open. I got sharp money on the under, and I'm still getting over money, and that's why I'm still, again, on the total, you want to respect the, you know, the sharp money more than just a half a point. So, you know, we moved the full point down to 77, but, you know, I'm at some point I might be inclined to go back up to 77.5 just because the public money is going to come that way.
And this is such a remarkable game on so many levels, and we kind of talked about this a little bit on Thursday's show, that Texas won the first meeting, and Oklahoma was a 7-point favorite. And over the last 4 weeks, Oklahoma's allowed 46, 47, 40 points to Kansas, which is almost a fireable offense for anybody outside of Lincoln Riley, and then 56 points to West Virginia. So in the last 4 weeks, this Oklahoma defense has given up at least 40 points in every game, significantly more than that in some of these games, lost the first meeting against Texas, and yet this number opened with a hook when this line was 7 at close in the Red River Shootout earlier on in the year. So you look for context clues out there in the marketplace, and it certainly looks like, whether it was intentional or not, the books took a little bit of a position on Oklahoma, And then to see that sharp money came in and hit that 7.5, and that now you're facing that sharp versus public split, very, very intriguing. And by the way, the total for this Texas-Oklahoma game the first time around, I believe, was 59. So we're about 20 points higher on the total here in just about 2 months later.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, the thing, too, is you look at Oklahoma and just the number of points that they themselves have put up. I mean, they've put up less than 50, maybe in the last 6, 7, 8 weeks, maybe twice in the two times they scored less than 50 was like the 48 versus Texas. And I think they scored 48 when they beat Oklahoma State as well. Other than that, it's been in the 50s as well. Now, again, Texas too, you know, yes, Texas did win that, you know, that game first time around, you know, with a 3-point victory for them. But you are talking about a team who's 9-3 on the season, you know, those three losses. And, you know, they lost at Oklahoma State, they lost at West Virginia. They opened the season losing to Maryland. So, I mean, they're, you know, they haven't been overly impressive other than that one big win.
All right, one more game with sharp action, then we'll circle back and talk about Georgia and Alabama. But this is the last FBS game on the board here, game 333-334. Stanford takes on Cal. This one was supposed to be played a couple of weeks ago, but the tragic wildfires out there forced this game to be pushed to December 1st. So game 333-334, what's the sharp involvement here?
Yeah, it's not a monster count involved in this game. And again, Stanford Cal is, you know, it's not going to be as big a game for the rest of the country as it is for them. I think I remember I went to one of these games at Stanford one time, and it was like for season tickets, it was like the number to call was like 1-800-BEAT-CAL. So out there, this is a big game for them, but not for the rest of us. Booking wise, you have seen this total and side move quite a bit. I mean, Stanford opened as a 2.5-point favorite. I think some people open as low as 2. We're up to 3.5, so getting Stanford money there. But that's just a reflection from my end, at least, of a wager count almost 3-1 favoring Stanford. However, I do have sharp money on the under this one. Under 48.5 is where they came. We're sitting at 46.5. I've got just a small wager count on this one. It's almost about 2-1 favoring the over, but that's just public money on the over. But sharps are on the under 48.5 in this one.
Well, here to the SEC championship game. This is game 315-316, Georgia and Alabama. Huge handle for this game, obviously. No noteworthy sharp action as of yet, at least at DSI. But what do your counts look like for this game?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's tough with these games sometimes because you're looking at, you know, an Alabama team who just seems to be head and shoulders, you know, above everyone else. Georgia does have the one loss on the season, and Alabama really hasn't skipped the beat all season long. So it's kind of tough to price these sometimes. I mean, you're looking at Georgia. They lost, I think it was at LSU. They're, you know, you're looking at their schedule in terms of who, you know, their most notable wins. I guess the Florida win would be their, you know, their biggest one heading into this game. But it's just like, you know, you talk about Alabama, it's almost like men versus boys sometimes. Now, I'm not going to say that in this game as well, but this line has gone up. I mean, we opened at, you know, I thought was a decent number at 13. We're up to 13.5 right now. Got a weighted count here, almost 2-1 favoring Alabama. So the public seems to be going the same way as well. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see this number touch 14 the way it's gone so far. Just the one thing that I think maybe is worth looking out for is seeing how this number gets beat around. Like, I think if it gets bet up to 14, you're just bound to see some sharp money come in. But I think even if it comes in at plus 14, if that happens to, you know, happens in the marketplace where the number gets driven up that high, it'd be interesting to see if it gets back, you know, down to say 13.5, and then finds a way back to 14, because I think the public is just going to bet the heck out of Alabama. I don't see anything, you know, to suggest that that's going to stop. The total here, not a whole lot. I mean, they opened at 63.5 here, and I'm still at 63.5. I know some places open 63, and they're up to 63.5. So everyone's pretty much, you know, dead set on 63.5, and we're up to 13 right now on the favorite there, Alabama.
One question I want to ask you about here, game 321-322 is Northwestern and Ohio State. And just before you and I started recording here, the odds screen lit up a little bit with Ohio State going up to 14 with extra juice or 14.5. Now, obviously the Buckeyes looked so good last week that it's really not that big of a surprise. But that Big 12 game that we talked about, Texas and Oklahoma, if Texas wins, everyone seems to believe that the door is very much open for Ohio State to crash the college football playoff party, unless Georgia beats Alabama. And with that line in the SEC title game, doesn't seem like that's all that likely. So let's talk about a hypothetical here. in the event that Texas beats Oklahoma, do you move that Ohio State line on air, expecting more people to take the Buckeyes because there's more at stake for them, or do you have to get hit before you make that move?
No, we would definitely have to get hit to make that move. I mean, you think the line is probably good where it is. It did open lower. Again, I didn't open it, you know, that as low as others in the market. We opened at 13. We're up to 14.5. But so far for me, it's just like a landslide of public money on Ohio State. You know, you get, you know, used to our wager count talks, and we're talking about like 5-1 and 6-1 can be some decent big numbers. This is like 10-1 favoring Ohio State, which is like just a massive one-sided count. I mean, and that win last week versus Michigan for Ohio State was just massive. They did beat Penn State as well, so they got that decent, you know, decent schedule strength, and they did lose to Purdue, which obviously is a black mark there. And Northwestern, I mean, Northwestern is kind of an intriguing team in that they started the season, I think, 1-3. They lost to Notre Dame by 10, which wasn't, you know, horrible of them. They're just lacking marquee wins, and I think, you know, Ohio State's just that, you know, if they bring their A game, they're a step ahead. And I think even the way the rankings are right now, you know, Ohio State's going to be putting their best foot forward and just try and get a blowout win and make something, you know, be really impressive as well. We had a bit of debate within the office as well that, you know, if Georgia loses to Alabama, you know, will they still make it in? Like, will a two-loss Georgia team be better than a one-loss Ohio State team? So it's interesting. We just different takes on this, and we've got math and analytics guys versus people who just say that just doesn't make sense. But really, I mean, you can't get inside the minds of the people who are making the final decisions.
So, I mean, sometimes we will get that scenario, and we've seen it in the NFL before where, you know, a team may have a chance at a playoff berth on the line. They lose. It opens up the door for somebody else. And we will see some significant adjustments in that line. I'm thinking it was maybe 2016. I don't remember if it was 2015 or 2016, but you know, I think it was the Giants playing the Redskins. And we saw that line just get out of control because of the playoff implications that were involved. So do you ever move on air in that situation, or does it have to be, you know, something that is the catalyst for that?
Yeah, no, you definitely – there's two things where if I don't get bet here myself, but the market just starts flying, you know, one way or another, you have to go with it on air. We'll move on air if the whole market goes that way, but not just because, well, this team beat that team or lost to that team, so this team needs to win more. Because you got to remember, there's two sides on, you know, out on the field. So one, it's not like one team's just going to, you know, throw in the towel and just, you know, give up on one game. And, you know, motivation obviously is a factor and stuff like that. But, you know, at this point in the season, when you're talking about, you know, conference championship games and stuff like that and fighting for CFP positioning, I don't think that's as much of a factor. I think everyone wants to be impressive when they, you know, win by as much as they can, because you never know how much of an impression that can make.
All right, we'll transition over to the NFL side here for the December 2nd card, and we'll start with game 357-358 on the board. Baltimore taking on Atlanta. Some interesting sharp action in this game, Brent.
Yeah, this line has moved. You know, when this number came out, I thought it was a decent number just because the way Atlanta has been going lately. You know, they've been, you know, a downward trend for sure, the way the Falcons have gone, and they've lost three in a row. And you're not going to say they've given up on their season. Now they've had some decent games, win some real tough losses, but they are at home. So you figure that's worth something. But Baltimore opened up on the road as a 2-point favorite, and that number's all the way down. You know, it's flipped completely to the point now today. Thursday, we've got Atlanta as a 1.5-point favorite. Now, sharp money has come in on this game. I've got public and sharp money going the same way, and that obviously is towards Atlanta, as you can tell by the line movement there. Sharp money did come in on the Falcons at a pick. I've got a wager count here of almost 4-1 favoring Atlanta. That's, you know, that's quite a substantial count. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe just like it could be people looking at, you know, Jackson as the quarterback for Baltimore. And he's just, you know, yeah, he's got a couple of wins underneath him, but it's not like he's looked overly impressive perhaps as a quarterback. I mean, his first start, yeah, he looked good as a running back, but last week, you know, he threw the ball a little bit more of a traditional quarterback, and he just didn't look that good. You know, there's a reason why there's not, you know, any one-dimensional quarterbacks leading offenses out there, and this is probably an indication why. Atlanta obviously has had a tough season, but they still, I mean, all season long it seems they've just been so hurt and so beat up. So I still expect to see, you know, a little life out of Atlanta. I just thought because of Baltimore in terms of their playoff positioning and stuff like that, where they are, you know, with respect to the wild card and their division, that this would be maybe a spot where they'd be getting some public support, but they're not. It's all over Atlanta.
That is interesting. You know, I sort of figured that maybe, you know, when I saw on the list here that the Falcons were on there, I thought maybe this was a game that did look like something of a sharp versus public split here because, you know, the as you mentioned, the Ravens have looked good. I mean, against weaker competition, sure. But, you know, they've got a good defense. They've got Lamar Jackson. It's exciting. Whereas Atlanta has all of this talent and just doesn't feel very trustworthy. But, you know, to hear both sides going the same way, pretty interesting here. So I guess the question then becomes, Brent, how high can this line go, do you think?
Well, hopefully not much higher because obviously, you know, the more we have to move a number to balance action, the more risk we're involved in just in terms of it landing. Now, you're not really as concerned about stuff landing around, you know, the 1.5s and 2s and stuff like that either way. But as you know, as we've seen the way these feel, you know, these kickers can't kick extra points in this league anymore. So it becomes more and more of a factor. Yeah, you touched on how we kind of expected a little bit more support for Baltimore, but I think too, with in terms of Jackson and his performance so far, that week one was really impressive when they just ran the ball. I mean, it was insane how much he ran the ball and how well he ran. But I mean, that was against a bad Cincinnati team. And then, you know, last week they didn't really roll it up against Oakland, and Oakland we know is a bad team and a bad defense. So they played two bad teams with bad defenses, and Jackson just hasn't really looked like a real NFL quote unquote caliber quarterback so far. So I just thought the way Baltimore was trending, we'd get more support for them, but we haven't seen that.
All right, let's go one spot down on the board here. Game 359-360. The Cleveland Browns take on the Houston Texans. And, you know, I'll go ahead and spoil this one for everybody. It used to be a laughing stock, really, that the Browns took sharp action pretty much week in and week out because sharp guys always thought there was value on Cleveland since they were so bad. Their line certainly reflected that. I don't think you can laugh too much at those people, the sharp people that are betting the Browns these days.
Yeah, I would say probably the last two, maybe even 3 years it's been where guys who like the analytics guys, the stats guys, were always betting on Cleveland. They were always betting against New England, and they were always losing. It was just like, but they just, you know, these guys, they don't get, you know, they don't get emotional. They don't look at, you know, wow, I can't bet this team again. It's just like if the numbers say bet the team, then they bet the team. And Cleveland's been and one of those teams who've burnt the sharp guys for a few years now, and same with how the Patriots have burnt the sharp guys for many years, because, you know, Cleveland has looked so bad and New England has looked so good that you've always find value betting against New England in terms of what the pure numbers and analytics say, and you always, you know, find value betting on the Browns. Now, that hasn't translated onto the field, except, you know, just lo and behold, now we've got Cleveland kind of coming around. It's kind of, you know, funny when you put it in perspective is just in terms of, like, the mindset of people and how they look at teams like Cleveland. Cleveland's 4-6-1 and Green Bay's 4-6-1. But if you ask anyone who's the better team, they're like, wow, I mean, the Packers, of course, right? I mean, it's the Packers, Aaron Rodgers and everything, right? But it's interesting because Cleveland does seem to be a bit of a different team. And I really like this game and this matchup. I do have sharp money on Cleveland +6. We have seen this number basically hover around the 5.5 and six number. And the reason it's kind of interesting for me is just because Houston has become such a public team. They've gone on an 8-game winning streak, which is just phenomenal. But if you look deeper, Houston seems to be, they've been fortunate. I think they've got a very average defense, very average offense, and they're kind of just due for a little bit of regression, I think. And now you take the flip side of that with the Browns. I mean, since they've made the coaching change, they're just a completely different team. I mean, they were almost a completely different team almost, you know, as soon as Mayfield took over at quarterback as well. So, there's a lot of things to like about Cleveland. Mayfield himself is, if you look at his touchdown to interception ratios since the coaching changes, stuff like that, it's just like night and day. So a lot to like here. And I like this game, you know, in terms of our position, simply because you got people liking Cleveland just because they're Cleveland. You got Houston people who are backing them because they're at home and they're on such a big win streak. So I'm getting public money on Houston, no problem. My wager count's almost dead even on this game. The sharps have kind of tipped their hand. And right now, I think at 5 and 5.5, I don't think I'll have any problem balancing this game. If we need anything, we know the sharp side so far has been Cleveland. So we're kind of comfortable with that. And I think Cleveland's going to be a decent play this week. I wouldn't be surprised to see this number hang around, maybe even drop a little bit further.
And of course, keep in mind too that when Brent talks about the wager count on a game, that does include something like a Houston teaser, which could wind up being a fairly popular thing for some people here, taking that 6 down to a pick 'em. as they look to continue that winning streak. So keep that in mind as well that, you know, while I'm not saying Houston is a good teaser play, I am saying that it is something that people are maybe looking at there to just take them down to a pick 'em. We'll move down to game 365-366 here. Denver and Cincinnati. I think these are both a couple of tough teams to back right now. Denver off a couple of misleading victories. They got badly outgained by the Chargers, badly outgained by the Steelers, but they found ways to win those games. And for Cincinnati, just a very list as long as you know, as long as a kid's Christmas wish list right now.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, if you sat there and you know gave me a list of reasons why Denver wasn't a sharp play or whatever, I would certainly, it's tough to argue. You're talking about two teams who are, I mean, Denver is 5-6 and they've won a couple games in a row, but Cincinnati's sitting there. Yeah, again, just the perception, like Cincinnati's 5-6 as well, and you're like, huh? That just doesn't make sense. Like, you just, the perception is that Denver is a better team than Cincinnati. And as of right now, you probably would say, in terms of the way they're trending, Cincinnati with three losses in a row, seems like, you know, AJ Green is questionable every single week. Dalton's out, Driscoll's in at quarterback, so we'll see how that will impact them. You know, the thing too with the quarterback chain, you could say, well, you know, maybe they'll get, you know, new life with him or whatever, but the Broncos too, that defense has been pretty solid for them, and they haven't had to be outstanding on offense, and they just seem to get the job done, and that's where they are right now. You have seen the line movement on this game go from 4.5 up to 5.5 where we are right now. I think there's still some fives hanging out there market wide, but I even see some like 5 -15s and stuff like that, which I tend not to use. If I'm going to go from 5 to 5.5, I may as well just move 1 10 either way. I don't put, you know, juice on numbers like that, but I did take sharp money on Denver -4.5 on this one. Like I said, we're up to 5, 5.5 right now myself. Looking at my wager count, it just slightly favors Denver. So this isn't like one of those games where I got a ton of public involvement. I do have, you know, a wager count almost dead even on both sides. So not really favoring one side or the other, but the sharp money is responsible for the move from 4.5 to 5.5 where we are right now.
So we'll move down the board here to game 369-370, Arizona and Green Bay. Green Bay, a 14-point favorite here in this one. They've only won two games this season by 14 or more points. So kind of some rare air for them in terms of hoping that they figure everything out with Aaron Rodgers and the coaching situation. And, you know, they really haven't been a very good bet against the spread for a lot of people here so far this season, but they're being tasked with covering a big number here this week. It is the total though that has the sharp action.
Yeah. And too, like, I don't know. If we need, you know, I'm not tipping anything because I don't have sharp money on this game in terms of the side itself. My wager count is pretty much dead even, so it looks like the number that we've got out there at 14 is working in terms of balancing our action. But yeah, I think it's, you know, Arizona's a tough team to figure out. I mean, they hung kind of after they made the you know, I think the change to Leftwich with the offensive coordinator, they hung pretty tough with Kansas City losing at KC by 12, I guess it was. They lost to Oakland by 2, which obviously is not good. But, I mean, at least they only lost by 2. And then, of course, they got blown out by the Chargers last week. And then you look at, you know, a Green Bay team who's lost, I think they lost 4 of their last 5. So, that, you know, they're obviously that arrow is obviously trending down. But, the 4 of their last 5 games that they did lose were all on the road. So now they're back home. So, you know, you still know that you're going to get public support for Green Bay for sure. That's why the numbers is high as it is. I thought it was going to, you know, be a little bit higher. I thought it would have come down, but it opened basically 14 where we are right now, and I'm 14 dog 15, so really haven't moved at all on the side. This total number has gone down, opened at 46, and I got hit by sharp money on the under 46. We're down to 44.5 right now, and you know, I think that's kind of a reflection of both these teams in terms of their, you know, their decent defenses on both sides of the ball. I would say Arizona's offense is not one that puts up a whole lot of points. You know, even after they made the coaching change in terms of the offensive coordinator, so they're not going to light it up. They're not going to put up a ton of points. They're just going to do things that make sense. They're going to feed the ball to, you know, Fitzgerald a little bit, maybe throw it deep to Kirk now and then. But other than that, it's going to be Johnson running the ball and Johnson out of the backfield, which could take a lot of time off the clock. And then Green Bay offensively, it's like, you know, you almost, you know, whether you like Aaron Rodgers or not, you almost feel bad for him. I mean, he's been through so many different wide receivers over the, you know, this season and last season, and the running backs as well. I mean, they're just, you know, flipping these guys in and out. And you saw, you know, the last couple of weeks, just kind of like the frustration on Rodgers' face sometimes in terms of the number of incompletions and stuff that he throws. So I kind of, you know, you typically expect to get public money on the over in games involving Green Bay. That is the case here as well. I do have a wager count favoring the over, just, you know, slight count favoring 2-1. So it's no surprise that it's, you know, just slightly favoring the over again. Not a whole lot of public money, I don't think, is going to get behind this game. When public bets totals Green Bay games, they usually bet them over no matter what the situation. But I've got sharp money under. So I just get a feeling this number is going to hang around 44.5, yet the public's still going to bet the over.
One more game to touch on here. We got two pretty good late games in the NFL here on Sunday. The Chargers in Pittsburgh got flexed into the Sunday nighter. That should be a good one. But game 375, 376, Minnesota and New England should also be a pretty good one here. This is kind of your quintessential NFL premier game handicap, where you got a Minnesota team that's decent on offense, very good on defense, against a New England team that's very good on offense and decent on defense. So what's going on with the sharp action in this one, Brent?
Yeah, this game obviously is going to get, you know, a ton of action. It's going to be one of the regular board is probably going to be the most heavily bet game. You know, Minnesota at New England right now. I'm actually still using the same number where I got bet with sharp money. So this number has kind of trended downward. I got down from New England minus 6. I think this number actually touched 4 in some places, 4 minus 15. I got bet on New England minus 4.5. I'm actually back up to 5 now. Obviously, New England, we talk about it. No matter who they play, it seems we always need the other side other than New England. But this is one of those cases where I'm hoping that, you know, Minnesota's a marquee enough team that I'm able to get some money back on them. My wager count is very one-sided, favoring New England. It counts almost 5-1 right now, favoring the Patriots. So I'm, you know, probably going to be staying the high end of that market. Sharp money again came in on New England minus 4.5. And it's, you know, I think it's interesting because this is one of those games where you're going to get different, you know, different sharps. I think are going to be on different sides of this game. Right now, the only sharp money I've seen is New England so far. So I think this number perhaps got hit by sharps initially and drove back down because you saw the public count is like 5-1 favoring New England. So from the opener of 6, I'm assuming that was sharp that got bet elsewhere. I didn't open 6 myself here, so I just saw the market move down. But once I hit, we hit down to 4.5, boom, sharp money came in on that. So that's why I'm back to 5. So I think you got different sharps going, you know, going in this game. They grabbed the plus 6 with Minnesota, not here, but I think that's what probably drove the number down at 4.5. Boom, they're back over on New England. And also public money on New England as well. And I'm hoping we need New England for a change, just because I think their offensive efficiency is just so strong. Their game planning is so good. And this is kind of like, it's almost like the time of year where New England starts behaving like New England, like the, you know, the losses earlier in the season almost get forgotten and they kind of gear up for the playoffs. You look at the running backs and how well they run the ball and also catch the ball out of the backfield. I think it's going to cause a lot of trouble for Minnesota. So I'm hoping this number kind of gets beat around by sharps and then I'm able to get some Minnesota money back the other way.
Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook. Great version of the odds report here this week. Thank you so much for joining us, bud, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great weekend, Adam. Appreciate you having me on.
Always great there to chat with Brent from DSI Sportsbook for the odds report. And missed him on last week's show, to be sure, but glad to have him back here this week. And hopefully I filled in admirably for him with last week's show. Coming up on our Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll have Joe Everett from NFL Draft, or excuse me, from Draft Scouts and Insider Football for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football preview. We'll take a look at that Redskins versus Eagles game on Monday night. Also recap what we saw in Week 13. And then our Week 15 college football first look with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com, looking at the openers for the bowl games, and then also, of course, the Army-Navy game. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.